everybody, and welcome to another episode of the GCSAA podcast. This episode is being presented in partnership with Bayer Environmental Science, the makers of Indemnify, a nematicide that controls nematodes while helping to maximize root health and promote better quality turf and playing conditions. For more information, go to es.bayer.us/indemnify. And a big tip of our GCSAA cap to Bayer for their ongoing support of the podcast. Well, here we are, episode 25 of the GCSAA podcast. I'm Scott Hollister, the editor-in-chief of Golf Course Management Magazine, and as always, I'm thankful you've taken the time to check out this episode. As required by podcast law, though, this is the time when I ask you to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever it is you get your podcast. I hope most of you have already done that, but if not, it really does help us out when you do that. So my thanks to listeners out there who have already subscribed and given us a rating or a review. Today, we have a very special episode of the GCSA podcast as we welcome our very first professional golfer to the show, and that's LPGA standout Christina Kim. If you pay any attention at all to women's professional golf, you know Christina Kim. She's as colorful, outspoken, and comfortable in her own skin as anyone in professional golf. But she's also unbelievably friendly, funny. She's interactive in person and on social media. And really, most importantly, for the purposes of our podcast, she's also a self-described turf nerd who has been really vocal in recognizing and supporting the work of superintendents at the courses the LPGA Tour visits each week. She's also one heck of a golfer. She has three career LPGA Tour wins, the Long's Drug Challenge in 2004, the Mitchell Company Tournament of Champions in 2005, and the Lorena Ochoa Invitational in 2014. Also has a win on the Ladies European Tour. She's been a part of three Solheim Cup teams in 2005, 2009, and again in 2011. She's coming off a kind of a tough 2019, only made 7 cuts out of 20 events. She's off to a pretty good start in this truncated 2020 season. She had 2 top 10 finishes in 2 of the 3 events that were before the shutdown because of the pandemic. And as the time of our recording, the LPGA Tour had just gotten started. It played 1 event, the Drive-On Championships at Inverness Club in Toledo. And she had a tied for 40th in that event. So she is off to a much better start here in 2020. It was really cool, wide-ranging conversation with Christina. And I was excited. She was so generous with her time in the midst of the resumption of play on the LPGA Tour, and that she was willing to do this. So without further ado, let's get after it. Here's our conversation with Christina Kim on episode 25 of the GCSAA podcast. Hope you enjoy it. You're still in Toledo, right?
Yes, sir. Okay. I am still in Toledo. We just finished up at Inverness last week. John Zimmers and his crew did an unbelievable job with the golf course, to no one's surprise. We had a fair bit of rain from Saturday through Sunday. So, the course was in incredible shape. It was firm, it was fast. And then the rain came in and the course still drained beautifully. So we were all very, very happy about that. And now we've got Greg. Greg.
Yeah. Greg at
over at Highland Meadows.
That's right. And John's used to moisture on the golf course when he hosted the last U.S. Open there that Dustin Johnson won
a few years back at Oakmont. That's right.
Yeah, just like 2.5 inches over one night. But pretty amazing places. And John's a great guy, and we'll definitely get into that because you have the distinction of being the first professional golfer on the GCSA podcast, and also the first that needed to bump up a time so they could do float tank therapy. So you have exactly, I think I know what float tank therapy is. Is that just for a general rejuvenation, or do you have a specific injury you're treating with that sort of thing?
The float tank therapy, it is just as much a mental and emotional mm-hmm. reset as it is a physical one. You're basically in a sensory deprivation tank where you're floating around, and I think it's like 100 gallons of water and 200 pounds of Epsom salts.
Wow.
And so you're floating around in a pod that is even more buoyant than the Dead Sea. So the water is set to your skin's body temperature. Basically, it's like 93 to 94 degrees. So when you're floating in there, you lose sense of where your body stops and the water begins. You're completely buoyant. So even like the deep subconscious of your brain isn't focusing on, you know, fighting gravity with every moment that you're moving. There's no light, there's no sound. So there's no feel, there's no, sight, there's no, sound, there's no, smell, cause it's just water, and there's no taste unless you taste that salty water. So it's complete sensory deprivation. And so the combination of having like warm water along with Epsom salts, which are great for, you know, muscle recovery and things like that. It also is just great to reset your brain. So like, I've got like theta brain waves that are going, my, pineal gland starts firing off, and it's just, it's a great, great time. I really would recommend it to anybody.
That's crazy. How often do you do that?
Well, this will be, you know, it's kind of hard, especially, you know, us being in this COVID era. And truth be told, thankfully, you know, I started doing it last year. I'd read about it a couple of years ago and always wanted to go. And so I started doing it last year at the beginning of the season and fell in love with it immediately. So I've been doing it for about a year. And when I am able to, one, I have to find out if there is one within, you know, an hour of the tournament site. Right. And then secondly, you know, they've always been very, very stringent in terms of being hygienic. Like you have to shower before, you have to get in there completely cleaned up, and then you have to shower afterwards. And then all of the water that are in all of these tanks or pools or whatever gets cycled in. And then they go through this like crazy, you know, ultralight therapy, something kills off any bacteria, any, you know, all of this stuff. So that was even pre-COVID. So this is the, you know, safest thing that I feel like I can be doing outside of just being within the confines of like the house that I'm renting this week, these 2 weeks.
Well, that's wild. I mean, I don't know, there's many superintendents I've had on the podcast who've done that, but I watched a documentary on Manchester City, the English Premier League team, and they have one of those in their training facility. And so the players do that on some regular basis. I'm not sure how often, and it runs the gamut from their senior players all the way down to some of their younger academy level players. So obviously it's being employed by, you know, athletes at the highest levels, because there's not many outfits as advanced as Man City. So you're in good company.
This is very true. Was it All or Nothing? Was it the Amazon?
Yes, it was that one.
Special?
Yeah.
The All Blacks is remarkable because they're such a storied, you know, legendary team, and to be able to finally get a peek into some of the inside of the team going on, and, you know, the actual players and the coach and everything like that. It's such a remarkable, series. And and the thing with the sensory deprivation, I mean, cause it's been around since like 1954, originally started, or maybe it was the 70s. Like I read about it because they were like, a lot of the articles I read were talking about how a lot of military vets and people that suffer from PTSD were taking it and were being removed from like antidepressants and things like that. So it's actually got a lot more of a, almost like a metaphysical, you know, emotional, mental, sort of reset that it allows you to have, more so than the physical. The physical part is fantastic, and it's great. I just, you know, for me, it was more about the emotional and mental, sort of benefits I could garner from that.
Well, crucial right now. I mean, you mentioned you're in the bubble, and I don't want to get too deep into this on this particular podcast. In the intro, I obviously spoke to why I wanted you on, and your increasing interest in agronomy, future superintendent Christina Kim. Tell us what's that like? I mean, there's been one positive test so far in the LPGA, but what are the protocol? Oh, two now. Okay. What's it like for you? What are the protocols? Do you feel comfortable in the setting? You've played one event onto your second, but what has that been like for you and the fellow competitors, caddies, everybody who's going through that?
Well, you know, I can really only speak on my own personal experience. I kind of half joke that I've been preparing for COVID for the last couple of years, because I don't do hotels. I've been doing Airbnbs for the last 5 years or so. I love to cook, And, you know, I like knowing what I'm putting into my body. So I don't really do takeout. I don't do, you know, eating in restaurants. I've basically been go to the golf course, get my practice, my play, everything in, physical therapy, gym sessions, whatever. And then I always joke, the only thing that once I'm done with that, because I'm so focused, the only thing that I care about is taking my pants off. And you know, that just means, you know, just to like relax and chill out. And so I, you know, make it back to the house I'm renting or the apartment or whatever it is. This week I've got this cute little bungalow and that's just me locked down for the rest of the day. So I've gone out to dinner with friends maybe 5 times in the last 2.5 years on tour. And so for me, I'm actually fairly comfortable in that regard. It's obviously very strange not having fans out there. It's, you know, very eerie. All of a sudden you realize just how large of an expanse a golf course really is. You know, obviously Inverness, it's so storied in history and, you know, 6 major championships and all of these amazing, wonderful things. And when you think about it, you always have like the hole that you're on and then you've got the fans and like me, I'm 5'6". So it's not like I can really see, you know, above the fans and see what's going on. And when we were out there last week, every single day, it'd be like in the middle of my round. And so in theory, I would have half the field on the golf course at once. I'm like, it looks like there's like 10 people on the entire golf course. Like you could not see anybody. So that was a little strange. And yeah, like I said, there are 2 girls prior to the start of the first round last week had tested positive. Gabby Lopez did arrive in town and tested positive. And Marina Alex, she was not even allowed to come to the tournament because within 7 days of travel, we had to take a serology test where it's a saliva test. And Marina's test had reported back as positive. So she didn't even venture to Toledo for the first event. She has since been cleared and, you know, she was asymptomatic, which is great for her. Just, you know, hopefully no one else that she's come into contact with at all in any form had, you know, contracted the virus from her. And so, you know, for me, I've been doing a good job of avoiding people. I mean, I was talking with Renee Parsons, who's the wife of Bob Parsons, who owns PXG. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I was like, hey, have you guys thought about getting like a neck gaiter? Cause you know, I do enjoy fishing as much as I love, you know, being not as much as I love being on the golf course. It is a fun pastime for me. And I, you know, it's like, we always have these neck gaiters where you can just, you know, roll it up. Yeah. You can, you know, wear it to, you can be covering your neck. You can use a headband, like all sorts of stuff. And so I was talking to her and like suggested maybe, you know, she can get one made for PXG because, you know, they have PXG apparel and there's just a little more advertising there. Yeah. And so, you know, I've got masks everywhere. In my like little purse, I have 6 bottles of hand sanitizer of all different scents based on what kind of aromatherapy that I need. I have a travel size bottle of Microban that I travel with if I need to spritz anything down. I have wipes, I have gloves. You know, I flew over to Toledo in a hazmat suit and goggles and, you know, people laughed at me and I'm like, I don't care because insofar I have come back and I've been able to report I have 2 negative coronavirus tests. And, you know, I sit there and I say, I'm doing it just as much for other people as I do it for myself. Cause heaven forbid, if I am like Marina was an asymptomatic carrier, I would feel horrible knowing that, you know, in case I passed it on to anyone else and infected someone else. So, you know, I'm just doing the best that I can and just really just trying to stay in the moment and focus on where I am and just, you know, enjoy the fact that I get to go back to work.
Yeah. How often are you guys getting tested?
So we are getting tested, you know, within 7 days of traveling to the first tournament site. And then we get tested at the very, very beginning of the week. So either on Sunday or Monday of the tournament week. And then, so next week, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be in Scotland for the Scottish and the British. We've got a chartered flight. We have tests that are being conducted on Friday to ensure that we'll be allowed to travel on the charter, followed by a test that we, as soon as we land in Scotland, we all go to the designated hotel, which for these 2 weeks, we have to stay in hotels. And we get tested and we're not allowed to leave our room until we receive a negative test result. And so we do that as soon as we arrive at the hotel. So, and then we have to do it again the next week. And so it's at least one test a week is how it's been. And, you know, for me, some people say, you know, should you be testing more often? It's kind of debatable because it's like, you know, it's, there's always that incubation period prior to when you can actually become infected and thus contagious. And as for me, I sit there and I'm like, I have no problem staying away from people anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm doing my best to make sure I'm not interacting with anyone. Don't stay with people. You know, just taking every precaution that I can just to ensure that I'm able to continue to play and, you know, love what I do and do what I love.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're in your, your travel attire to Toledo certainly raised some attention. It's a good segue because I wanted to talk to you about your social media. You posted some photos of your trip out there, full hazmat suit, very safe, but it obviously sparked some reaction. Were you surprised at all about the reaction that you received from that? Just considering what's going on, it certainly doesn't seem to be the most outlandish thing in the world, but it was probably more than most people would do. So, what did you think about all the reaction you got from that?
I mean, realistically, anytime I post anything, I'm always pretty surprised by any sort of reaction, whether it's positive or negative. Cause I sit there and I'm like, you're on my feed. What do you,
yeah,
this has no bearing on your life in particular. Like, why do you give a shit what I do? You know, like, and, you know, cause when I use my social media, you know, it's always for, you know, if I'm looking at other people's posts, it's 99.9% of the time, it's filled with nothing but love and positivity and encouragement and understanding, because even if it's something that I wouldn't necessarily, you know, align myself with or subscribe to, I want to know the whys. And so, yeah, I mean, I did receive a bit of, you know, negative, you know, remarks, and I received a ton of positive ones as well. And a couple of people that were like, you know, I never thought of doing this. And then a couple of people that said, this was genius. And a couple of people that say you're overreacting. And a couple of people that said, you know, some pretty awful things. Yeah. And I'm just like, this is just my feed. I'm like, you don't have to even be here.
Right.
You know, I'm not necessarily posting this to share with anyone. I'm just, this is basically nowadays just a timeline of what it is that I'm doing. You know, I'm happy to interact with people and I'm happy to have conversations with people, be they, you know, filled with love and positivity or be they filled with the ability to learn lessons on both sides of an argument. And I'm just like, man, you know, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't care either way. You saying that I'm overreacting and you saying that I am, you know, absolutely psychotic and then saying, why don't you drive or why don't you do this and that? I'm like, it's not like I'm sat there and purchased an entire airplane. I'm like, I'm staying in my seat. I'm staying in my lane. I just sat there. I read a book and I did it safely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, and I did actually think about driving and I was like, one, my body wouldn't be able to handle it because I wouldn't want to drive with anybody else. So it'd be 17 hours in a vehicle, which is not easy on anyone. And secondly, you know, at the end of the day, it's not that I'm worried that I would get sick. It wasn't solely that. It was, again, if I was asymptomatic, I wouldn't want to pass it on to anyone else. And secondly, someone was like, you seriously think that there's that other people on the plane aren't going to be as cautious as you are? And I'm like, look at the numbers. I'm really sorry. There is distinct proof there are people. And I mean, there are actual interviews conducted where people are like, oh, well, if I get sick, I get sick and I don't care. I'm not going to let that stop me from living my life. And I'm like, well, I hope to God you don't get sick. And I also hope to God that you don't have anybody older or anybody who has a compromised immune system or anything that you come into contact with, because it's not just about you. It's about all of us as a collective. So
right.
This is me doing this for everybody. And plus let me live my life is what I like to say.
The reaction sounds like generally like the overall societal reactions to the whole thing. You have people that are very supportive of those things. There's people on the other side who think it's who don't think it's such a big deal. So I mean, you probably tapped into a level of response that people just respond to the disease and the pandemic anyway. So, but you have always been very open on social media. You have been an open book. You like to interact with people. And I'll tell you, it kind of it matches my experiences. I a couple of years ago, got the chance to go to the ANA Inspiration in Palm Desert and hang out with David Hay, the former USGA official. David Hay, who's the director of agronomy at Mission Hills, Jared Taylor, spent a few days with them, and I was just blown away by how open and approachable the players in the LPGA are, and just willing to have open conversations. And I'm not saying anything about the PGA Tour or the professional majors that I've been able to attend, because I've had nothing but positive interactions. But this just seems to be an extension of kind of what I experienced when I was at Mission Hills. Is that how you view social media? This is just an extension of your personality and the way you conduct yourself when you are interacting with people?
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it, you know, there you have some people that utilize social media in a way where they're all about branding. And then you have some people that are like, I'm going to use this platform to get the opportunity to say things I don't have the guts to say in real life. Yeah. And then you have people that are in the middle. And I think that I'm in the middle, because I sit there and I'm like, I don't care about branding. You know, I prefer my brand to just be me. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, your brand is you don't give a shit. And I'm like, don't take this the wrong way, but I really don't give a shit that you think that I don't give a shit. I just sit here and I say, all I know is all I know. And I am what I am. And it is so exhausting to even try and be anything other than who you are. So for me, you know, I love to interact with my fans. I love to have conversations. I love to learn. I crave knowledge. And so for me, yeah, I mean, why go through life doing anything other than just who you are? You know, I mean, I understand if it's like, you know, if you're on television and, you know, you have to have like certain FCC regulations or, you know, something like that, if it's work related, then I totally get that. This, you know, again, I've been doing the same thing my entire, since I was 12 years old. So to me, I feel like I'm just, you know, emotionally stunted at 12, and this is all I know. Yeah. So I don't have the luxury of being able to say, oh, you know, I have to make sure that I say the right thing, or I have to, you know, make people feel this way. I'm like, people are going to feel the way that they feel. You know, again, this is my channel. This is my platform. This is my outlet. You guys are welcome to get a peek into my life. All I'm going to do is just show you the, you know, parts of my life that you can get a peek into, as opposed to having some sort of curated crap of this or that or whatever. You know, on Instagram, I don't use filters. I don't do this. I don't do that. I'm just like, this is me. You know, if you like it, I don't care. If you don't like it, I don't care. This is me. There's nothing else that I can do about that.
Well, it's certainly refreshing. I mentioned in the intro, your handles for people. You already have a substantial amount of followers. Made me jealous for the, my magazine's account. But we have a very small world we're playing in agronomy, but it's the Christina Kim on both Twitter and Instagram. So I'll just repeat that now. Before we go too far, I'm curious your background. I gave a little bit of your playing background in the intro as well. But you know, what was it about golf that first attracted you? How did you get into it? And just maybe tell folks a little bit about your career path to where you are right now.
Yeah, well, my dad introduced my brother, sister, and I to the game. I was just shy of 12 years old, and he actually, you know, and as an agronomist, I'm sure you would appreciate this. I did not touch or mar a single blade of grass for the first 3 months that I was learning golf. We had one of those, you know, AstroTurf mats. It was about, you know, 3 by 1 foot. And there was a little metal hook with a ball hanging off of a string, a plastic ball. And my dad took my brother, sister, and I to the backyard and said, this is how you hold the club. This is how you stand. This is blah, 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 and then swing. And so he said, I want you to swing 500 times a day to each of us. And, you know, I mean, growing up in a Korean American household, you know, it was just like, okay, you know, and so after 3 months, my dad took the three of us to a driving range, and we had built in a lot of the basic fundamentals of the golf swing. And so by the time we found out, oh, there's a point, like the ball eventually goes away. It's not just dangling on the string. You know, we had a something of an understanding of the golf swing and the golf, you know, the path and all of this and that. And so we picked up the game pretty quickly that way. And, you know, I fell in love with the game. Realistically, I mean, I was, like I said, I was just shy of 12 when I first started playing. And, you know, I always enjoyed, and I still do to this day, sort of like puzzling out the whys and trying to understand how to, you know, get better, be better, do better. And I would say that I really started falling in love with the game the harder it became. In that, you know, because when you have no handicap, going to a 40 handicap, to a 30, to a 20, you know, it's infinitely easy to shed off a few strokes. It's like, oh, you just keep the ball in front of you, or, you know, you just hit it straight, or you keep it dry, you know, whatever it may be. And then the fewer strokes you're trying to save off of your score, the more infinitely difficult it is to be able to craft that. And so, you know, it's normally not something where you can, there aren't a lot of things in life where you're like, in order to get just a tiny bit better, you have to put in that much more work and effort, and you have to learn even more to try and shave off one or two strokes. So I just loved the idea of just continuing to peel back the layers of the onion. And, you know, it realistically, it did help that I was good at it, you know, and we took a very unorthodox path in order to get there. And so, you know, on my 18th birthday, I turned professional. I told myself, you know, I had long talks with my parents about, they were educators back in Korea before they came to the US. And, you know, I had said, realistically, my brain should last 4 years longer than my body.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I question that these days. And I always say, you can, you know, I was like, you can go back to school. Realistically, you can. You know, no one was doing it back in, you know, around the turn of the millennium. I just said, again, I'm like, I don't care what other people do. I'm like, I don't care. I don't need to be, you know, 18 years old, you know, finishing my freshman year in college. I don't care about any of that stuff. I want to play. You know, I'm like, you go to college to figure out what you want to do with your life. This is the thought process I had back then. I've learned that there's not necessarily any correlation,
right.
You know, and that was just a thought process I had back then. I said, you can always go back. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, almost 20 years later, it's cool to be older, quote unquote, and going back and finishing up college. So, you know, that is something that I feel like is always back there. If it is something I want to take, if I feel like I'm, you know, done with the playing aspect of golf, and I want to further my education in other ways. And so, you know, it's been a fun ride so far. Realistically, and it may sound absurd, I'm entering my 18th season on tour, 19th year as a professional, and I feel like I've just passed the halfway point of my career. I don't care if I've got kids that are younger than, that were born after my rookie year. I don't care about that. You know, I sit here and I'm like, golf has no eyes. It doesn't care how it looks. All it cares is how many, you know. And like they say, you know, the old adage, or no pictures on a scorecard. And, you know, it with age comes wisdom and experiences. And, you know, I still tell fart jokes. And like I said, I'm emotionally stunted to that of a 12-year-old. So I'm doing okay.
That's right. We'll get right back to our conversation with Christina Kim, but want to take a minute to talk about our friends at Bayer Environmental Science, the presenting partners in the GCSA podcast. As any superintendent who has worked with Bayer and used their products will tell you, Bayer is a company committed to providing technical expertise and innovative solutions that both improve turf quality and make superintendents' jobs easier. And that commitment extends to Indemnify, a nematicide that allows turf managers to control nematodes while helping to maximize root health and promote better quality turf and playing conditions. Indemnify features a soil penetrating formulation that delivers broad spectrum nematode control with a simple application. To learn more about Indemnify and how it can help you control nematodes on the golf course, check out es.bayer.us/indemnify. That's es.bayer.us/indemnify. Once again, our thanks to everyone at Bayer for their support of the GCSA podcast. And now let's get back to more with Christina Kim. you see with a lot of professional golfers just that the constant challenge and problem that the game presents to you and how you solve that. I mean, you look on the PGA Tour, you've got, Phil Mickelson was, I believe, a top 10 finisher at 50 last week at the World Golf Championships. Tiger's obviously over the age of 40. You're a few years off of that, that figure. But you talk about kind of solving the Rubik's Cube that is the game of golf and the constant challenge it presents. You've gone through some changes this last year where you've taken, I know you had a bit of a struggle last year, but you had bounced back before the pandemic with a couple of top 10 finishes. You've undergone, your body's undergone some changes. You've approached some new diets. How has that all figured in? Are those just ways that you're approaching, hey, these are new avenues I can explore to get better, at what I love to do?
Well, yes and no. Ultimately, the reason why I started, living a ketogenic lifestyle, I hate the word diet personally. Mm. It's got the word die in there. Yeah. And so I, and for me, a friend of mine years and years ago, sort of provided me with the knowledge that food is life. He had some friends that had eating disorders, anorexia. There was this one girl who was anorexic, and she was bedbound in a hospital for a number of weeks, which is just terrible and tragic. And, I think they were able to get her to a point where she was able to get back into a more quote unquote normal eating habit. And he said, you look at it, she's denying herself food and she's basically killing herself. So she's denying herself life. So food is life. And, I just had kind of told myself, I knew a couple of people that had done the keto lifestyle, number of friends actually that had tried it. Some looked awesome. Some looked no different. A lot of them said that they had, increased energy and improved mental clarity. And I had gotten to a point where I had played, might have been 10 out of 12 weeks or something like that. I was emotionally drained. I was physically exhausted and I was mentally just flatlined. And I said, I can't do this anymore. There has to be, something's got to give. And so I said, let's just try this, because it's I say it a lot, is what's the worst that happens? If I, try going on keto and I end up, dying because I have, half an avocado in one hand, the other one gets lodged in my throat. I'm I've had a good run. I go when I go. And so I had told myself, I'm going to get rid of sugars. Because you notice when you have sugar, you have those highs and then those sugar crashes and things like that. Yeah. And, it's more addictive than heroin. And so I was like, let's just try it. I don't know if I'll be able to do it anyway. It was the same as when I started my float tank therapy. The very first time, the gentleman was like, what do you expect? I'm like, how am I supposed to know what to expect? My body is just going to do what my body does. I have no expectations because I can't see into the future. I'm just going in with an open mind and an open heart. And so a few times a year, I do what I call hibernation, which means I basically go into my room, close the door, lock it, turn off the lights, and I just lay in bed. It's an emotional reset, a physical reset, and a mental reset where I just basically just lay there. And this time around, it was almost this time last year, not quite. I had a 4-day hibernation where, and I packed snacks. I had water everywhere and I had, I think it was pecans and macadamia nuts. And I was like, I'm going to sleep for 17 hours a day because I'm dead. I'm a walking zombie and I just want to get rested. I want to refresh everything and then start again. And so I, would watch, a little bit of YouTube or Netflix or watching the golf or something like that. And I'll just I just need to do nothing. I've been doing so much. I need to do nothing. And so did nothing for a while and came out of it. And after 4 days of water and nuts, I didn't have any sugar cravings anymore. And I'd be the kind of person that would have, a soda a day, And when I say a soda, I mean one of those 20-ounce bottles. Yeah. And I didn't understand macros. I didn't realize that a single can of brand name soda has about 41 grams of sugar. And when I started doing research into the ketogenic lifestyle, I'm supposed to have 30 grams of carbs in a day. I can't even finish a can of soda. Like, that is absurd. And so, you know, when I came out of it, my taste buds had changed and I had no sugar cravings whatsoever. There's oftentimes some side effects they call the keto flu, where you feel, you know, general malaise, headache, you know, your body is getting dehydrated because, you know, since it's being, you know, it goes into ketosis, which means it's in survival mode. Your body normally naturally consumes carbohydrates, converts that into energy. When you deny yourself carbohydrates, your body is like, okay, we have two options. We can die or we can try and find another source of energy. And my body was like, oh, look, there's a ton of fat here. We'll just start burning this and turn that into energy. And that, you know, we're going on, you know, almost a year since then. And I've just loved it. You know, I eat lots of avocados. I have at least, you know, I have an avocado a day. I love, you know, adding oils into my diet. You know, I love cheese, you know, lots and lots of nuts, huge fan of the pili nut, which is a nut I discovered in the last year. Which is like one of the most like complete, perfect nuts. It's very low and it's like 1 gram of carbs, ton of good, healthy fats in it. Got wonderful nutrients like magnesium and potassium and, you know, vitamins and things like that already in this tiny little nut, and it tastes delicious. And so, you know, and for me, like underripe strawberries are too sweet now, even natural sugars. I don't really consume any fruit anymore.
Really?
It just, they're just foods that don't excite me. So, you know, I basically just stopped eating carbs for the most part. And by carbs, I mean like, you know, the sugars and the starches and things like that. I mean, I have a crap ton of spinach every day and salads and all these wonderful vegetables. So I've got tons of fiber in my diet. I just don't need any of that sort of like the filler stuff.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So you mentioned you love cooking. How much did that change? Are you finding like all these new recipes and things that you're trying? Did that change? And I'm also curious about the golf swing. As you had physical changes, did you have to make adjustments in the swing to accommodate those?
Well, you know, I've been cooking my whole life and I have done, you know, I've done everything from veganism to vegetarianism to paleo to, you know, not quite full on Eddie Pepperell style caveman, you know, dieting. And so I've dibbled and dabbled in all kinds of, various, eating nutrition lifestyles. And so for me, it really wasn't a huge thing. It was just like, okay, like I'm just going to make sure I omit sugar and flour and this and that. And because of paleo, you know, it's, you know, generally gluten-free anyway. And so I'm like, okay, so then instead of that, I'll just going to add in whether it's almond flour or, you know, make my own macadamia flour, make macadamia milk, you know, this, that, all kinds of things. So for me, I enjoy, again, because it's sort of that problem solving thing, is that Rubik's Cube of finding out how to find, you know, the right combination of sour and salty and, you know, sweet in the sense of like, I mean, I can taste sweetness in, butter and cream and various oils. I can taste sweetness out of that, you know? And so, you know, it's just, again, just trying to find that Rubik's Cube of finding, you know, that perfect balance. And, in terms of my golf swing, I mostly joke, maybe it's only half joke. Really not much of a joke. I've been working on swing changes for the last 9 years. And so for me, you know, during the off season, I didn't take much of a break. I maybe took 4 days off. And again, you know, I had spent years before where I would say, I'm not going to touch my clubs until Christmas. And I would not be happy because I'm like, why am I depriving myself of something that I love? Yeah. I love to play golf. I love to figure out the swing. I love to try and be better every day than I was a day before. So why was I denying myself that? So I was, you know, hitting the golf course every single day. I was working on swing changes. And, you know, even though it was a bit of a drastic change of, you know, I mean, I've lost about 60 pounds in total, probably almost 70 pounds of fat and added on almost 10 pounds of muscle, I think. I was able to work through it because every single day I was hitting balls for a couple hours a day and then going out and playing. And so you don't really notice and pay attention to the swing changes because they're happening in real time as your, you know, your body changes and stuff goes in and then other stuff falls towards the ground or whatever it is, you know, it's just, and at the end of the day, the way I look at it is I'm like, this is me again. Yeah. You know, I mean, I say, you know, sometimes I'm like, you have to dance with the girl that brought you, and it's not always going to be the prom queen. And so if there are days where it's like, you know, I'm like, oh, all of a sudden I'm like, I can build more lag because I'm not bouncing off my love handles. And I'm like, okay, what is that going to do for my timing here? What is that going to do here? And it's again, you know, just finding that Rubik's cube and just tinkering with it. So I've enjoyed it immensely.
Do you feel pretty good about, I mean, you guys played two events prior to the pandemic. Is that right?
I did. There were three events prior to the pandemic.
So you played twice.
The two later ones.
And two top tens before the, before them. Came back T40 at Inverness. Where do you, are you comfortable with where your game is right now?
Oh, for sure. I've, you know, I hit the ball better than I have in a really, really long time. I just, less than a week before the first round, I changed my putting setup. And so I, cause again, I'm like, what's the worst that could happen? I'm like, I'm hitting it so good. It's not like I'm going to have to legitimately worry about missing the cut. I'm like, it's, you know, if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't, it didn't. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, went back to my old putting style, started making everything. And, you know, one good thing about last week, even though it was hard as hell and it was so much fun and required a bit of creativity and I couldn't make a damn thing, you know, it was like, I wasn't worried of thinking, okay, I have to, my proximity has to go from 18 feet to 12 feet and then I keep missing putts. So I have to go from 12 feet to 6 feet and then, you know, trying to like press and put pressure on myself. I said, I'm swinging it great. You just continue to give yourself opportunities. They are going to fall. And then the tournament ended and I was like, ball. You know? So for me, I was just like, okay, like I'm glad I experimented with that. I'm glad I gave it a try because at least I'm not going to, I don't like the idea of what ifs.
Right.
I like to say, let's try it. Let's see what happens. And if we can learn from it, fantastic. And I did learn some great positive things from it. And I was able to sort of take some of the good things that I did learn from that and implement it to my old stroke. And I feel even stronger and even better than ever. So, you know, I think of having those, 95 putts in 3 days, you know, those were 95 little lessons for me and I was able to learn from them and I'm going to take those lessons with me into this week. And I feel, you know, my confidence is very, very high. And I'm hitting the ball better than I was hitting it in Australia. So it's nothing other than just tons and tons of positives.
Well, that's awesome. Well, let's get to the point why I wanted you on the GCSA podcast. Let me feel like the old sports writer that I once was to talk golf. But now I've moved over to the superintendent side of this great business. And why I reached out to you at first is I noticed the interactions you were having with our members, people who work on the turf side of the golf business. And it was just a fun conversation. I'm curious, how much interest do you have in that side of the game? And obviously there's some other questions we can get into about professional golfers and why it would be beneficial for them to have that knowledge. But, you know, how deep have you gone into it? Where would you say your interest in that side of golf lies?
My interest in agronomy is deep and vast. My knowledge is, I am currently looking for my ball that flew 20 yards into 6.5-inch bluegrass grass. So I know nothing, if I'm being perfectly honest. You know, my love for this, you know, it's just all, again, it's all part of the entire, you know, embodiment of golf. You know, I love to play and I love to swing and I love to think about strategizing when I'm on the golf course. And that also then entails understanding architecture and, you know, styles of golf courses based on where you are in the world, what time period this golf course came from, you know, signature looks, things like that. And then from there, you also want to look at, you know, where in the world are we? And based on where in the world we are, you know, it's like, okay, it's not like you're going to find Pass Palom in Nebraska.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it's just like just realizing everything is inextricably tied together. And so I feel like understanding turf and soil compositions and things like that, like just really provides me with a much broader and more full understanding of the game. And, you know, I've been very fortunate. The golf club that I'm a member at over at Orange Tree Golf Club, our superintendent, Rob Torrey, he is a magician at what he's able to produce. Obviously being in Central Florida, you are limited with grass types. You are right. Limited with, resources, quality of water, just water from the tap that you might think about drinking, let alone, you know, actually wanting to consume, you know, such incredible ranges of temperature and heat and humidity levels, dew point numbers, things like that. You know, it's remarkable what he's been able to do, because he realistically has the best greens in Orlando throughout the year. You know, obviously they're going to be a little bit slower in the summertime, and sure. You know, we have some of the best greens on the golf course without a massive budget. So, you know, I've been always been a huge fan of his. You know, we've gotten to know each other. When I first joined the club, we have these every day we have like little tournaments where, you know, you get like an A, you're the A player, you pick your B, C, and D player, and you guys go out and it's like called a scratch game and everything. It's just a chance for people to get to know each other. And Rob was on my team my very first day, and I just absolutely fell in love with him. And so, you know, and also, you know, growing up, it was just always like, I was told, like, someone's out there mowing the fairway. Let them mow the fairway, yeah. You know, because without the people out there, without the agronomy team, we're just going to be playing in chest high grass, yeah. You know, and you should appreciate the job that they do and understand that it's not an easy job. And, you know, different weather is going to cause for different challenges. And, you know, so for me, it's just, again, it's all encompassing of just trying to understand and appreciate and love the game to the nth degree, and to try and understand how turf in and of itself can help me be a better golfer, both as a player as well as an ambassador of the game. Yeah. And, you know, the way I see it is that, you know, other than a player, everything outside of when you yourself are a player, everybody in relation to golf has the most thankless job in the world.
Yeah.
You know, whether that means the entire agronomy crew, whether that means everybody in the pro shop, whether that means, you know, the caddies that are out there, whether that means the people that are working in the bar and grill, you're all the same in that you guys work so hard to provide the golfer, whether that means a professional, recreational, whether that just means you yourself, Scott, when you're playing golf, mm-hmm. You know, everybody else out there that has any sort of association with golf has the most thankless job in the world. And without everybody's help and everybody's passion for this game, none of us would have the opportunities that we would have to be able to play. And, you know, I think that getting a better understanding of turf and grass types, weather conditions, how that can affect everything, you know, will help me to appreciate the architectural side more. And by virtue of appreciating architecture, it will help me understand my strategy, which will help me to play better. And, you know, just again, it's all encompassing and they're all inextricably tied.
Yeah. As a tour professional, how much opportunity do you get to interact with the host superintendents at the clubs? You tweeted about this and you mentioned it at the outset about John Zimmer's at Inverness, and, you know, interactions and things he shared with the players and the history of the club, some of the changes they've made there recently. How often do you get a chance to interact to kind of get that intel, maybe inside intel on a facility before you play it?
Well, you know, the majority of golf courses, they will provide us with, you know, like what the anticipation is for rough height, step cut, fairway height, greens, grass types, things like that. excuse me, for, you know, in John's situation where he was able to provide us, you know, again, with that history of the golf club and with everything else and just knowing how much love and care everybody over there has put into the golf course, it was just on a different level. And, you know, truth be told, I've had a number of interactions, you know, meeting superintendents, you know, and just saying thank you and talking to grounds crews. Prior to this, probably half a dozen, maybe 10 times, mm-hmm. Which isn't a lot considering how many tournaments that I've played in. Anytime I see anyone that's at the golf course, I'm just like, hi, and not necessarily going to go and walk up and say, hello, thank you for this. Sure, my name's Christina, blah, blah. And, the thing that really kind of took it over the top though was at the beginning of the year when we were in Australia, for the Women's Australian Open over at Royal Adelaide, which again, just primo, just an amazing facility. I had gotten to know one of the pros over there at the golf club, Tony, and he was like, hey, our staff are having an after tournament party. So, and my boyfriend, Duncan French, he was caddying for me those 2 weeks. He was giving his 2 weeks of like charity donation, yeah, just having a deal with me. And he's from New Zealand. Tony was from New Zealand. And so they, we're just kind of chit chatting and Duncan was like, do you want to go to the party afterwards? I was like, I don't know, who's going to be there. He's like, oh, well, the superintendent and the grounds crew and the tournament, the general manager and, guys in the shop. And I was like, oh, so the people that have provided us the opportunity to have such an amazing championship, F yeah, let's go, And so we went over there and we were just talking with the guys and, getting to meet guys from, all the way from Melbourne and all over the country that came together to create such an amazing championship for 1 week. Obviously with the all of the time that they put in prior to that, right. Right. Just getting that opportunity to really be able to put faces to, you're the reason why I had such a perfect lie here. And you're the reason why, I was able to truly see the masterpiece that was, the way that the fairways were rolling and just the overall use of the land and, how everything was framed. And it was just it was so, so cool, And so when I was doing the PGA Tour live coverage a few weeks ago at Memorial, I was talking with, Dave Wilbur, who's, become a friend of mine. And, he was just like, hey, I can get you in touch with this person, or I can get you in touch with this person if you want to try and get some, information regarding Muirfield Village, and so I had a couple conversations, as a result of that, which I was able to, use to further enhance the commentary that I was providing, because I was not on site. I was, because it was with, especially with everything going on with COVID, I was off site from there, 1,700 miles away, and talking with a lot of people, they're like, I thought you were walking with the groups. And I was like, nope. I was far away. It was because of guys like Dave and everyone else that he had connected me with. That's why I was able to provide them with that kind of information and, just get people to understand. Again, it's just about getting to understand as much about the game as possible, not just there's, number 18 in the world and he hits ball far and he hit ball close and he made putt go in. It's like, it's so much more. And I think that getting that full grasp of the game enhances everything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You had, and you, you work with Brian Katrick, who is a good friend of GCSAA. We have a partnership on his show with John McGinnis, weekly, a superintendent session. So I was excited to see that. Brian's a good dude. So, yeah.
Brian is fantastic.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that experience? I don't know if you're previewing a life after your playing days or not, but I know it came. You had 2 weeks to prepare for that. Is that right?
Well, I had been approached about 5 or 6 weeks before the Memorial, and a good friend of mine, Laura Neal, who is with the PGA Tour, she used to work with the LPGA Tour before, sent me a message. Was like, bro, do you want to try and do the PGA Tour live? And I was like, yeah, that would be so fun. Yeah. And so I did 2 days of the RBC Heritage and that was really, really cool. And I get a phone call a couple weeks later and they're like, hey, do you want to come in and do some work, all 4 days? And I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome. So yes, 2 weeks before, it was less than 2 weeks before the Memorial, I got the green light of, yeah, we'll have you over there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is at Jack's place. This is Jack's baby. Yeah. Jack's going to, he's there. And obviously, with it being the Memorial, you're going to have one of the best fields of the year and Tiger might be there. At the time he hadn't committed, so I didn't know. And I was like, this is going to be so much fun. Yeah. And, I just showed up and I was like, because, a lot of people are like, maybe this will be a career that she can take, if she doesn't mess this one up. And I was like, well, again, what's the worst that's going to happen? I knew it was going to be long hours because it's 4 days. You're pretty much nonstop. It's like 2 days, 2 hours on, 1 hour off, two on, one off, you know, and you're doing that for like 10 hours. And I was like, I need to make sure that I am not dead and drained at the end of day one, because again, it's like playing in the US Open where you have to make it to that 72nd hole and you don't want to get gassed out in the first 18. And so I was like, you know, realistically, I'm a player first and foremost. And so the worst thing that could happen is I get a text that says, well, pre-COVID, we would have had security physically throw you out of the building because of COVID. We can't. So can you please leave? And I would say, okay, then I'll just go back to being a player. Yeah. And so I said, I'm just going to have fun with it. I'm going to do what I would do if I was watching the US Open with a friend of mine that is not very knowledgeable in the game. And I'm going to sit there and say, you know, because of the lie, this is what's going to happen. Because of the overall architecture of this hole, this is going to happen. Because of the grass type and the direction that the grass is growing in, because of the position of the sun, the grass is going to be doing this. And, you know, wind's going to do this to moisture levels. It's going to grow this, that, whatever, whatever. I'm just going to talk to my friend and give them as much information as I can and let the rest of the story speak for itself, because at the end of the day, it's not about us as announcers. It's about us just trying to enhance what it is that the guys are already doing. And I had a blast. I was like, the whole time I was just like, don't swear, don't swear, don't swear, don't swear. And I didn't swear. You know, it's really not that hard. And
mission accomplished then. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just said, because if I was, it's not like I didn't try. It's just, I said, do your best and be yourself, because if I tried to be anything other than what I am, I would not have been able to make it all 4 days. I would have been exhausted. I would have not been able to make it, and people would have been able to tell. And I'm just like, if, yeah. And also if people don't like me, okay, what's new? You know, yeah. It's like, it's all good. I'm still a player at the end of the day. So I had just such a wonderful time, and Brian and Billy Kratzer and Craig Perks were just so amazing to work with, just like Swantech and Carvalho and Stupples were the first time that I was there. And, you know, it was just like such an amazing opportunity that I was presented with that I absolutely loved it. And I would love to be able to do it again. You know, right now my schedule is pretty busy with tournaments, so yeah. It's not like that's going to be something that can very easily nor readily happen immediately in the future. But who knows, you know, who knows what the future is going to hold. So I'm just out here having fun. And
well, that's cool. You know, that's a super neat opportunity to get to do that. And you see so many players who turn into excellent announcers and excellent commentators because they are able to translate that the particular perspective of a professional player that someone like an 18 handicapper like myself would have just a totally different view. I just think it's so cool to be able to translate that experience that you've had on with the game and explain things to me that I just wouldn't see. And I know there are a lot of others out there. So that's super cool. You might have a future career. You and Dottie Pepper can be the future dream team for some television network.
Hey, who knows? All I know is I'm really thankful that the PGA Tour Live folks gave me that opportunity. And one thing that I really, really loved about their way of doing things was they wanted the story to be about the players. And because of the PGA Tour Live, we had two featured groups in the morning, two featured groups in the afternoon, featured holes, things like that. And it was really, you're following along as though you're inside the ropes with these groups of players. Yeah. And so we were focusing more on the players, and sometimes dead air is okay. And when you have a caddy and a player interacting, like, one, don't speak because they're doing your job for you. And two, don't speak because I want to know what they're saying, yeah. You know? Yeah. And so it was really a very unique situation. And again, I was just there to try and enhance, the what we were looking at on the television. And, you know, one thing I do love is that it had nothing to do with me because I'm not a fan of talking about myself. So it was really, really fun to be there, be present, enjoy what they were doing, and really be able to just let them showcase what it is that they can do.
Well, that's awesome. And listen, I appreciate you've given far too much time. I don't want to keep you from the float therapy. Obviously we always appreciate when there are folks like yourself who express, and I speak about our members, the GCSA members, golf course superintendents are always appreciative when players are interested and knowledgeable about agronomy. And we'll have to get you to a golf industry show sometimes right after the PGA show. We'll see what happens with 2021, coming up, but we'll get you on some equipment. We'll show you some seed. We'll do the whole nine yards. But Christina Kim, thank you so much for your time. Good luck this week. Good luck going forward with the rest of the season. Stay safe. And thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Of course. Thank you so much. It was awesome to get a chance to chat with you and to all of your members. Thank you guys again for everything that you do. You guys are the real MVPs. And so even if there are times when people on the golf course do not appreciate you, I appreciate you guys so much. And I know how hard it is, the work that you do, and you can tell the love of your craft in everything that you do. So thank you guys again from the bottom of my heart.
Awesome. Christina Kim, everyone. Wrap on episode 25 of the GCSA podcast. Had a ton of fun talking with Christina Kim and hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. My thanks to Christina for taking the time to join us. Very cool of her to do that and really enjoyed it. Remember, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever it is you get your podcast. You can also check out previous episodes you might have missed on all those same services. A lot of good content to carry you through the pandemic or the quarantine or mowing your fairways or whatever it is you might happen to be doing. And with that, we are out. My thanks again to Christina Kim, to the master of the mixer, our producer engineer, Evan Bissell, to everyone at Bear for their continued support of the podcast as our presenting partner, to the nine members of the GCSA board of directors and all my colleagues and coworkers at GCSAA headquarters. And of course, my thanks to you for listening. We'll be back real soon with another episode for you to enjoy. But until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll catch you again real soon on another episode of the GCSAA podcast.